What was it like to hear about the JFK assassination? Or America's triumph over Hitler? We're seeing Queen at Live Aid. Our past is a collection of stories that bring us to now. Welcome to the Eyewitness History Podcast, where we view history through the eyes of the people that watch the events that shaped our world. Here's your host, Josh Cohen, and these are their stories.
Hello, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to the Eyewitness History Podcast. This episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with C.J. Cook. C.J. Cook is an accomplished author and devoted historian who has immersed himself in the rich tapestry of the South Pacific's history. His debut work, Tyree, Artists of the South Pacific, soared to extraordinary heights, clinching two prestigious Gold Awards for Best Cover and Best Biography from the Independent Book Publishers Association. Beyond his acclaimed writing, Cook is a lifelong aficionado of manuscripts with a keen focus on art and the South Pacific. His portfolio includes insightful biographical sketches of historical figures, reflecting his passion for preserving the narratives of the past. Serving as a board member of a prominent manuscript association dedicated to safeguarding historical documents, Cook actively contributes to the preservation of invaluable heritage. He has released a new book called Beauty and the Beast, Flora, Fauna, and Endangered Species of Artist Ralph Burke Tyree. It's the story of Ralph Burke Tyree's creative genius in painting colorful and exotic plants and animals worldwide, many of which are endangered species facing extinction. Published to mark the 50th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act of 1973, Beauty and the Beast explores the works of the last 10 years of Tyree's life, when animals became his focus. And now I bring you C.J. Cook.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-218-6010. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-218-6010. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-218-6010.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Okay, I'm here with C.J. Cook. C.J., thanks for joining me.
Yes, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you. I'm really interested in discussing you, some of your past work, certainly your new book, Beauty and the Beast, Flora, Fauna, and Endangered Species of Artist Ralph Burke Tyree, which we'll get into. Before we do, C.J., please tell our listeners briefly who you are and what you do.
Well, I grew up in Wisconsin. My father was a physician there, and so I ended up going into medicine and moved to San Diego more than 50 years ago and have been here now, a retired physician. I was really a physician scientist, so I did a lot of writing in the scientific field. And even I always liked history, so I got into writing some stories, some papers on some physicians, their history, brief, of course, and that was part of my interest in doing these books later on. But I'm also a collector of manuscripts, which range from science, space, poetry, even presidents for a while, but I kind of moved on from that because they're hard to get the old ones and quite expensive to get a George Washington or an Abe Lincoln letter or anything like that. But I belong to a manuscript society. I'm on their board. These are archivists and collectors and people around the United States and a few international people, and we meet once a year, and we talk about history. We go to museums and all around whatever city we're visiting and get behind the scenes. We were in Hollywood this year and got to go behind the scenes of Hollywood-type history in the Huntington Library and so on. So I really love that, and you get to see George Washington's letters one of them was a letter he was carrying in his pocket throughout the war, Revolutionary War, that just in case anybody, you know, questioned his legal right to be the chief. He had pulled this out and said, signed by John Hancock, that you're in charge here. And so that was really, really, this is the thing he carried around the Revolutionary War for 8 years or whatever it was. So that kind of stuff, when you actually see, you know, something that Washington carried in his pocket, it's pretty neat. Anyway, so that was my background in history. And then I like to travel the South Pacific. And so to marry these things, Hawaii, Tahiti, and lots of islands. And that's sort of how I got into the Tyree store. I ended up buying a painting of his, and there wasn't much information about him. Very, very little on the internet. And I liked his painting. I ended up buying a few more and ended up, you know, trying to figure out who this man was. And so it was a different scientific study of history, of digging out. And there wasn't anything on the internet for him. He just was a very quiet, shy man. So there wasn't too much there.
Mm. Fascinating. Thank you, CJ. I owe you thanks, too, because you answered one of my next questions also. So I believe it was your first biography, as you mentioned, Tyree, Artist of the South Pacific, did quite well. It received 2 gold awards for best cover and best biography. I have it right here at my side. I'd love to know what the inspiration behind that was. What was it about Tyree that drew you in as a subject?
I think it was just more fascinated. I like art. I'm not an artist. I never will be.
Neither am I.
And because there wasn't anything on this man, I just wanted to, I'm curious. And my scientific background was to find answers to things. And since there was not much written, but I knew he had 7 kids and they're all my age growing up, and I had to find him. And it took a while because they're very shy and quiet people, and I couldn't get anybody to answer me back. I, you know, found their jobs and tried to call them, and nobody answered me back until finally his daughter. He had one daughter of the 7 children, the rest boys, and she responded. Her name is Marva, and that's how I got to know the family slowly but surely. It took a couple years, really, and met them all. I went up to their hometowns and met them, usually Turlock, which was his hometown. And his wife was still alive. That he died in 1979, but his wife, who was 90 plus, was still alive and quite with it to interview her. And so I went to her house with a couple of the kids, and they just let me into their life, basically, to learn about this man and his fascinating background.
Oh, wonderful. I suppose every interviewee is entitled to one softball question, so I'll lob you yours now. Who was Ralph Burke Tyree?
Well, he grew up in Central California. He was born in Kentucky, but came there as an infant to Delhi, which is a small town. And his dad was a farmer, basically, and ran a little grocery store. And so he grew up there and in that area. His high school was kind of the most prominent thing where he got into sports and he liked art. It was kind of, you know, 2 different things. He was a football player, a track star, and yet he liked art. And he would, you know, paint pictures even early on as a high school kid. And in fact, his future wife, he was his model that he started painting.
Mm.
So this guy that was an athlete started painting and went, then did a bunch of classes in high school and then went off to do college around San Francisco area, art schools there for another couple of years. So he got his training, was well trained, and actually ended up working for Walt Disney doing some background painting. Huh. In 1940-41. And then the war entered the picture in December 7th. And he signed up right away, like 6 weeks after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, he signed up to be a Marine, of all things, and came down to San Diego, where he did his training. And within 6 months, he was shipped off to Samoa. He was an infantry band. And he was going to be one of these guys that hit the beaches of Iwo Jima or something like that. But his general in charge of the base in Samoa, Western Samoa, or American Samoa, recognized, or they found out about his talent of being an artist. And so they put him to work at the base doing menus and then painting on the walls, you know, go-go girls of the Samoa to keep the morale up. And so he started doing that. And then he realized that he's quite good. Let's have him. We'll set him up a studio. And that's what they did. They set him up a studio on the base, real near the general's office. And they had him paint portraits of their loved ones back home. Oil paintings and nice ones. Yeah, I've got pictures in the book of in painting these. Fortunately, the family was so good at saving everything, and they had all of these photos from his war days of him painting the murals on the wall and doing the portrait painting of, you know, Price's wife or whoever. Even Price himself. I didn't see the actual painting. I saw the pictures where he had painted Price himself. So they became buddies. This guy's a private, and this is the general, but he liked Tyree a lot. And so that really was the genesis of his career. He had all this background training, and he was a master portrait painter, real, almost photogenic qualities in his painting during the war years.
Wow, that's incredible, CJ. Thank you. I do want to get to the book shortly here, Beauty and the Beast, of course. But I'd love for you to talk a little bit about, maybe a little bit more, about his wartime experience. I'd love to know kind of, you know, how the war affected him, what it was like for him post-war.
Well, during the war, initially he'd go on a reconnaissance flight with a pilot and would sketch the terrain. That, you know, they didn't have the camera ready things that we have nowadays. And so he would, you know, paint the idea of the land, the islands of the South Pacific, and come back and do that. But they then moved him to his other job of being the portrait painter for the base. And one of the things that was most interesting is that he, in writing back to Margot, his girlfriend, he would do paintings. Some were watercolors and some were just pencil paintings, twice a month. They, instead of doing a letter to her saying how much he loved it, he'd do a little drawing to her, however good size, 11 by 9. And she saved every one of them. So I got the photograph, they're all in the book of that, his little love letters, which were paintings that he sent her all during the war. When the war ended, he came back to San Diego, actually, with the general. The war wasn't quite over, but he came back with the general, and they were good friends. There was even an episode where the general brought him over to his house here in San Diego. Just Margot and Ralph Burke came to his house with the general. So that's it. He met famous people through that general. He stayed in Camp Pendleton here in San Diego at Oceanside for a while, and then the war ended. And he got married, and they started having kids about the baby boomers coming out every 2 years and produced these seven children. And he just gradually was working odd jobs as well as painting. And then in 1952, he had an opportunity to go back to the South Pacific, which he loved, into Guam, and took his family there. At that time, he had four boys and was working for the Navy, but as a civilian. And that's really where he started his career as a portrait artist and had his own little side business of painting.
Wow.
That became his profession. He was one of the few artists that survived on his art for his whole career. So that's pretty amazing, too, because that's a hard thing to do. And selling them for $25 a piece and things like that.
No small thing.
No.
Thank you, CJ. Yeah, so get into the book. So Beauty and the Beast, Flora, Fauna, and Endangered Species of Artist Ralph Burke Tyree. You worked with his granddaughter, Paige Herbert, which I'd like to get into shortly. What was it that prompted you to want to write this book? I suppose it's not unfair to call it a follow-up to your first book.
Yes. Well, his painting in the 50s and the 60s was mostly portraits of Polynesian girls and guys. And it was oil painting on board, or once in a while canvas. But in 1960, there was a big push to go to black velvet because a guy named Leetag, who also wrote a book about, had popularized painting on black velvet, not the kiss shops that you see from south of the border, but really, really nice paintings. And the money was in painting on oils on black velvet because the tiki bars were coming to be. And so he started, this is Tyree, started painting his people on black velvet in 1960. And he did that for 10 years, selling to lots of tiki bars in California and Hawaii. But in 1970, he changed. He decided to do animals. He always liked animals a lot, particularly the raptors. And he decided to, you know, do animals as specially endangered animals. So the first book I dedicated to just his South Pacific life and his paintings, and only one small chapter to animals because it didn't seem to fit with the South Pacific title, Artists of the South Pacific. And I had enough of his animals in my own collection and the family's. One of the things that they did was they allowed me to see everything he had and paintings that they had so I could photograph it and put it out and go visit them, take my camera equipment and take pictures and learned his whole history because they had notebooks and everything else, as well as these paintings. So I had a lot of the animals and his flowers. It actually started right off the bat. All his girls had a flower in their hair. And so first couple chapters are just about the floral things he did, sometimes just what he was putting in their hair. And then he'd actually do paintings of various flowers, passion flowers and other things. But the big emphasis was on the animals, both the common and then the endangered. So that's what that second book is about, Tyree's animals, basically, and how I got into doing that to showcase those things.
Excellent. So then how was it that you were able to pull Paige Herbert, his granddaughter, into the project?
Well, that came from Marta. As I mentioned, Marta is his only daughter. We've always had a great relationship, and she actually has helped with both books, kind of doing the final edit to be sure I had all the facts right about her father. And she suggested her daughter, Paige, who was an art history major as well as into editing. And I said, well, that sounds like a good combination.
Yeah.
And so she has helped me a great deal in digging out some history. Every one of the pictures of the animals that he painted, we have some photographs with it. And then we have a little description, what the painting's about. And then we tell about that animal. We dig out some facts about that animal, why you think he painted it, and so on and so forth. Mm. And she helped a great deal in, digging out that information, and then did a wonderful description of each one of her grandfather's paintings that are in the book. So she's been a great collaborator in this endeavor.
Wonderful. Yeah, the why he painted it is kind of interesting to me. I'm very, just interested in what that artistic shift looked like from the first book, which, as you mentioned, animals was sort of out of theme for the first book. Would you say he had a shift later on where he was more focused on animals, and I suppose with endangered animals specifically, perhaps there was a rooted issue he had with environmentalism? Would that be fair to say?
Yes. He liked owls especially, wanted to have his own owl museum, wanted to go to Africa, just didn't have the funds to do that. They dreamed of going there. He ended up helping set up an animal park in Oregon, where he did the outlay of the design of the animal park, which is still in existence there. I think, yes, it was. And it was also the time period when especially the raptors were in trouble. The eagle was in trouble. DDT was still being used. Rachel Carson wrote a book. Yeah, we got to stop DDT because we're hurting all of our hawks and eagles, and their eggs aren't hatching, and so on. And the eagles were, way down. The bald eagle was way down in numbers, was going extinct right then at that time.
Wow.
And he wanted to paint eagles and hawks, and that's what he did to bring attention to that. And the Endangered Species Act came out 50 years ago.
Yep.
Just about this time, in November, December, it was signed by Richard Nixon, of all people. And
that's some historical irony.
Yes. So that was his stimulus to paint the owls. He liked them. He wanted to save them. He was very interested in, bringing the attention to the ones. And some were pretty exotic that I didn't know much about that would do paintings of.
But for our listeners, I better ask you what DDT is.
Always a poison to spray over the crops to kill bugs, and they would use it out of airplanes, to crop duster type airplanes, and it would hurt the egg production of your birds, particularly the eagles and hawks and stuff like that. And then the California condor, which was going extinct too about that same time for the same reason, plus shootings and everything else that was causing it. And those birds have, really come back. In fact, there's more bald eagles now than they've ever had in 400 years.
Wow.
Because of that. I have them around here in San Diego, bald eagles. I've seen them a couple times and that's crazy. We need all that because they need to be around water because they eat fish and stuff. But we got some water and that's where they are. And so it's pretty amazing that the eagles have come back. And of course, the California condor was helped a great deal by the San Diego Zoo here, where the principal ones that, helped hatch, they captured them all out of California. There was only like a dozen left. And then they used puppets to hand raise the babies. Yeah. So you may have seen stories about that. So the chicks wouldn't be humanized too much and they could release them. So now they've released a lot of these big condor back into the wild. So that all came about when they were almost extinct in Tyree's time. So he painted
incredible. Yep. Wonderful. No, thank you, CJ. The book obviously covers, you know, a vast range of species, penguins, tigers, leopards. I'd love to know, by your lights, how did Tyree choose which species to feature? And what message do you think he was hoping to convey about their conservation? Do it, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't really know. And I don't think anybody knows. And we knew he had a lot of love for the cats and the owls and hawks and eagles. Just to, like I said, he wanted to do a zoo. But I don't know how he picked some of these really rare type of animals, probably just his own research, but nobody really gave us, the family didn't know how he got that interest in the particular ones. And it was wide variety from different continents, as you see, like we cover a little bit from South America, Australia, but a lot from Africa. So he really liked Africa. So there's quite a bit in there about the big five, and he painted, you know, most of those. There are probably other ones out there that there wasn't no master copy of all his paintings, and he would sell them as he sold them. And so we don't know what other ones. Usually when I write a book, I'll hear from other people, hey, I got one of these. And just like the first book, people are writing to me, telling me that they have a Tyree painting, because he was very prolific. He probably painted over 4,000 paintings. So they're out there, you know, they're beautiful, you're becoming more expensive because of the notoriety. But the animals aren't so bad. There's little people like girls more than they do animals, I think. But he loves the animals.
Indeed. I'm curious, do you have a favorite painting from the book? One that particularly jumps out at you, CJ?
I think the cover, the tiger on the cover, I don't know if, while you're the audience.
Yeah, right now, yeah.
But yeah, I really like that. The pangolin, which he has a orange pangolin, is on the back cover. And that's the most trafficked animal in the world because they're quite docile. And they just roll up in a ball when somebody gets near them and they think they're protected. They are from a lion or something, but not from a human. You could pick them up and then they, you know, they use people in the oriental areas, use their scales like rhino horns for an aphrodisiac. And so the animal dies and they use them for meat. And they were, even at the beginning, blamed for COVID that it came from the pangolin. Oh, no, no. Didn't come from the pangolin. And because they were in these open air markets in China and other places, that's, you know, was one of the beginning stories for COVID, but that's why that animal is kind of endangered. It's docile and it has people wanting to eat it or use their scales, so which is tragic. And I'm sure why he got into that, painted that animal, and that's why it's on the back cover.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yeah, COVID, that's a whole other podcast.
Well, it's not for the pangolin. Don't blame that.
Not for the pangolin. The pangolin is innocent. This might be an odd question. I'm struggling with slightly how to phrase it, but I suppose I'll ask it this way. Do you think he considered himself a conservationist?
I think he did. And you know, just his goal, he painted a lot of animals. You know, there's over 100 in the book, and there's probably another 100 or more out there. If not, I don't know how many. But and the other thing that was interesting, he would paint some of them on oil paints on board and sometimes on velvet to, and the same animal, there's a couple examples in the book. And it was, and I have some of those. And it's just an amazing difference because he felt that the velvet, which is has a texture to it, was like the fur or the feathers of the animal he was painting. And you should leave it soft. You should leave it, it almost looks alive. And it does. So you can see the difference when you see the one that's on oil painting on board next to the other one. Is there's more life to it. And he said you can even touch it as long as your fingers are clean. But I think so. And he would paint out in society. I mean, he'd paint at galleries. He'd paint, you know, at stores where he's selling his things so the people would come by. And so when you're painting animals, you are going to attract attention to those animals. And yeah, I think so. Like I said, he loved the owls. He wanted to have his own owl zoo. And he wanted to go to Africa and learn more about them. That's why I think there's so many African animals. So I think he felt that way. I mean, he was a very quiet guy, just like the kids, every one of them. You have to force the questions at him. They're nice, they're pleasant, but you have to just ask him, well, tell me about your dad. Well, what do you want to know? And why did he paint? And it was, you know, difficult to get the answers from them, but they're all artists. And in the first book, I dedicated the last chapter to each of the kids and what they most of them are painters. One builds fancy old cars, rebuilds them, and one does metallurgy.
Oh, wow.
Makes bronzes of animals up in Oregon. and beat full-sized bears and things like that. So they were all very, very talented. And of course, his wife was very talented. She was an artist, too. And so they got the genetic predisposition to do art. The whole family does. So.
Oh, wonderful.
And Paige loved to learn about her grandfather. It was a big thrill for the two of us to work together because she's getting to learn more about her grandfather through the process of writing this book.
Sure. Well, that was going to be one of my next questions, actually, was if there was a particular anecdote during your research for Beauty and the Beast that particularly stood out for you.
Oh, boy. Probably I can't remember one right off the bat. You know, just learning his story through his wife at the beginning, there was, you know, many stories. One of the interesting things was even the one thing they wouldn't do was let me see his, he had a slide collection. It was the days, he was quite a photographer. For his models too, and I found this, they let me into everything, but they wouldn't let me see his slide collection of his models. And I asked once, and they said no, he didn't want people to see that. And I said okay, and they had it. Everything else, you know, they told me all about it, and they had a lot of animals in their house on the walls, and the sons would bring them in for me to photograph them and stuff. So all around Turlock. So it was quite fun, and I enjoyed it very much. And then Margot died in the process just before the first book came out. And, yeah, I went to the funeral, and I was part of their family, basically, after these probably 4 years of interviewing them. And that's all the information that had to come from them and their collection. So relics from his war years and his early career and so on and so forth. And but a specific one on an animal, answer your question, I don't think I can think of one right now. Probably will after the interview.
Yeah. It's going to be right when we hit end recording, right? I feel like I have to tell you, as someone that interviews people for a living, yes, there is nothing quite as bad as trying to pull an answer out of somebody, you know? So I feel your pain, not here, but I have felt your pain. We're making quite good time, CJ. I just have a few questions left, as a matter of fact. What would you regard as his artistic philosophy? Did he have a particular thing that he liked to keep in mind as he was painting, or is that a completely dud question?
I think he wanted to show beauty, not only in the animals, but also his portraits of his subjects, you know, male and female. So they're photorealistic. They almost look like he did a photo of it. But the background is very abstract. But it brings out the colors that helps show the person or show the animal really beautifully. I've got one of a lemur that, you know, lemurs just live in Madagascar, and there's about 100 different species, but they're all declining greatly because they use them for meat and the forests are going down. And he did the lemur, almost identical to going after a butterfly, one on a board and one on a velvet, and it just pops to life. And so I think his philosophy was to show this beautiful animal and want you to love it so that you would protect it. I think if I could summarize, I think that would be his idea, that you want to take that home, put it on your wall, because you will remember that animal, and you'll hopefully know something about that animal and do your part to try to save them, because we're losing lots and lots of species as we go along. And big ones die faster than little ones because they're more obvious, and they get shot and for meat or whatever. And, of course, habitat change is happening all over the world, jungles coming down and civilization creeping in, that it causes a problem. I mean, and some places like, you know, the cougar here, they don't have any place to roam. I mean, it's cut back, and now they have to build bridges across the freeway so that the cougar can keep hunting. We got cougars right in our neighborhood here.
Wow.
Of course, they better not bite a human or they'll be dead. So
yeah,
they have to watch out for themselves. We have two or three that are in the neighborhood.
Wow. Indeed. You answered, I think, another one of my questions as well. So I think I'll ask you this, CJ. Where can people pick up the book?
Well, of course, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And on my website is even better because I can autograph it, which is southpacificdreams.com. Really easy to remember. One word, South Pacific Dreams. And yeah, that's the best place because you can see all the books and learn all about my story and the stories of artists that I'm working on. And like I said, I can sign the book for you and inscribe it however you wish.
Wonderful, CJ. Thank you. The book, once again, is Beauty and the Beast, Flora, Fauna, and Endangered Species of Artist Ralph Burke Tyree. CJ Cook, this was such a pleasure, man. I really appreciate you taking the time for me.
Thank you very much for doing this and reading the books, and I hope you enjoy them.
I did. I'd recommend them to all of our listeners. Thank you so much, CJ. I'll let you go.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you'd like to support Eyewitness History, the easiest way to do that would be to subscribe to the show on the podcast player of your choice and leave a review. For more information on Eyewitness History, along with show notes and links to resources, go to ParthenonPodcast.com, where you can also listen to some other great podcasts by the Parthenon Podcast Network, such as Scott Rank's History Unplugged, Steve Guerra's History of the Papacy, James Early's Key Battles of American History, and Richard Lim's This American President, along with many others. Thank you.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.